Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with a Capitol report on the latest updates in what some experts are calling a constitutional crisis emerging in Washington, D.C. over potential obstruction of justice by President Donald Trump. We'll also tell you the views of 700 former federal prosecutors on this issue, including 8 who served in San Diego. Get ready for a wet weekend, and we'll have details in our weather report. Federal hate crime charges have been filed against the shooter who opened fire in a Poway synagogue. The city of La Mesa is developing an age-friendly plan and wants the public input in a series of community meetings. The county has rolled out its proposed budget, and it includes increased spending to help our region's most vulnerable people. The county has also approved upgrades to Lindo Lake Park and Lakeside. From Public News Service, hear about a bill in Sacramento to protect patients from excessive charges for out-of-network medical visits. Plus, hear about changes to the county's social host ordinance to include marijuana as well as alcohol. On Destination East County, hear about festivals and events coming up across our region, from a wine festival to America on Main Street and many more hot happenings. 22 people have applied seeking to fill the vacancy on the El Cajon City Council left by the resignation of Ben Colasio. So who are these 22 applicants? Find out on today's show. And finally, we'll close today by re-airing our Wildest Jobs interview with Lakeside's Rodeo Clown. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Attorney General Robert Barr has faced criticism over his decision not to prosecute President Donald Trump for obstruction of justice, a decision Barr admitted in congressional testimony that he made without reading any of the evidence. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has said that Barr's summary of his report misrepresented his findings. Now the Attorney General has refused to turn over an unredacted copy of the Mueller report to the House Judiciary Committee or return for further questioning. The House Judiciary Committee has voted to hold Barr in contempt. President Trump has threatened to exert executive privilege to block release of the full Mueller report, but later said he would leave the decision up to Barr. The standoff has triggered what some analysts and legislative leaders are calling a constitutional crisis, a crisis which potentially could lead to impeachment proceedings against Barr, Trump, or both. It could also lead to a court battle. Now over 700 former U.S. attorneys, including 8 former San Diego federal prosecutors, have signed a letter affirming that the evidence in Mueller's report released so far strongly supports obstruction of justice charges, and that Trump would face multiple felony charges for obstruction if not for a memo issued by Barr. Barr's memo concludes that no president should ever be prosecuted on obstruction of justice charges, no matter the evidence. At least 8 of those who signed the letter are former prosecutors in the San Diego-based U.S. District Attorney's Office for the Southern District of California. They include prosecutors who served under both Republican and Democratic administrations, and most of them were appointed by Republican presidents. Robert Rose spent 12 years working under Presidents Ford through Reagan. Stephen Anier, who served for 7 years during the George W. Bush and Clinton administrations. Robert Jerry Coughlin, Jr., who was U.S. Attorney for 10 years under Nixon, Reagan, Ford, and Carter. Thomas Coffin, who served 21 years under Reagan, Nixon, George H.W. Bush, Ford, and Carter. George Hardy, 34 years under Reagan, Clinton, Carter, Obama, and both Bushes. Gay Hugo Martinez spent 16 years as a prosecutor under Carter, Reagan, Bush I, and Clinton. Pam Naughton served 8 years under Carter and Reagan. And Robert Semmer, 11 years under Nixon, Ford, and Carter. The letter, signed by all of them, states that Trump's conduct, trying to control and impede the investigation against the president by leveraging his authority over others, is similar to conduct we have seen charged against other public officials and people in powerful positions. Rose was critical of public comments by U.S. Attorney General William Barr, which he says distort the law, Times of San Diego reports, and according to Rose, at least 10 acts of potential obstruction are well documented.
This is Jonathan Goetz, on KNSJ with a weather report. Get ready for a wet weekend. A storm system is forecast to bring heavy rains and thunderstorms to San Diego County Friday through Sunday, the National Weather Service predicts. The storm could dump up to 4 inches of rain across our region. It may also result in minor flooding of roads and creeks in urban and rural areas. So keep your umbrellas handy and drive carefully.
The U.S. Department of Justice has filed 109 hate crime charges against John Ernest, the 19-year-old who opened fire at the Shabbat Poway Synagogue on Passover. The Rancho Penasquito's teenager is also charged with one count of murder, as well as 53 counts of attempted murder. Prosecutors may seek the death penalty for crimes allegedly motivated by hatred toward the Jewish community. The evidence includes a manifesto the shooter posted online shortly before his crimes. U.S. Attorney Robert Brewer Jr. announced, "We will not allow our community members to be hunted in their houses of worship, where they should feel free and safe to exercise their right to practice their religion." And he adds that in filing hate crime charges, his office aims to achieve justice for all the victims and their families. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ from Poway, this is Miriam Raftery.
The City of La Mesa is developing an age-friendly communities action plan as part of its Livable La Mesa project. After getting feedback from the community, the city has identified these priorities: outdoor spaces and buildings, transportation, housing, social and civic participation, community information, and health and wellness. The public is invited to upcoming planning meetings. Topics of outdoor space and buildings, social and civic participation, and community information will be discussed on May 22nd at 8:30 a.m. at the fire station on Dallas Street. Housing, transportation, health, and wellness will be discussed at two separate meetings, one on May 15th at 8:30 a.m. at Space Bar Cafe on University Avenue, and on May 22nd at 5:30 p.m. at the fire station on Dallas Street. La Mesa launched the Livable La Mesa project in December 2018 through AARP's Livable Communities Initiative, with support from the San Diego Foundation Age-Friendly Communities Program. This initiative is an affiliate of the World Health Organization's Global Network of Age-Friendly Cities and Communities. With input from La Mesa residents, the Livable La Mesa project aims to prepare a plan to help make La Mesa a great community for all ages. For more information, visit cityoflamesa.us. Reporting for East County Magazine from La Mesa, this is John Fistier.
The County of San Diego has released a $6.21 billion proposed budget for fiscal year 2019-2020 that invests $112 million in new spending to help the region's most vulnerable residents. That includes increased funding for mental health professionals and facilities to help people with mental health disorders, and more money to assist those with substance use disorder. In addition, the budget seeks to help those experiencing homelessness or who are at risk of becoming homeless. The budget also addresses the lack of affordable housing and provides help to children and families in the foster care system. The budget doubles investment in the Housing Trust Fund to create affordable housing for homeless families and veterans, older adults with very low incomes, people with special needs, and others at risk of becoming homeless. Up to 1,800 new affordable units could be built with the new funding. In addition, 700 more affordable units may be built on 4 county-owned properties. The budget also waives fees for building granny flats or accessory dwelling units in unincorporated areas. Child Welfare Services will see another $7.4 million to support 65 new positions and increase investigations into abuse. There will also be a new social worker training to reduce family violence and a pilot ride-sharing project to help families with visitation. The budget will also advance services for Alzheimer's disease. In addition, 18 new positions will help public health services identify emerging trends and monitor infectious diseases, such as measles. The county is adding 338 staff positions, with 270 at the Health and Human Services Department. The budget also includes funding for new Live Well centers, parks, trails, and a fire station. The county will create two new achievement centers for young people at risk of returning to juvenile hall and continue funding the Safe Destination Nights recreational program that keeps 8,000 teens off the streets during the evening hours. Continuing to fund the Fresh Start program will help adults with criminal records overcome barriers to success. The program can reduce felony convictions to misdemeanors, dismiss or expunge criminal records, and offer certificates of rehabilitation. Sustainability remains a high priority. The county is exploring energy options such as community choice energy. Implementing the county's climate action plan to reduce greenhouse gases will include planting 3,500 trees on public lands and adding 500 acres of open space to the 41,000 acres already preserved. Public hearings on the budget will be held on Monday, June 10th at 9 a.m. and on Thursday, June 13th at 5:30 p.m. Budget deliberations and adoption of the first year of the two-year budget plan are scheduled for June 25th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. San Diego County supervisors have voted unanimously to approve $7.5 million for the first phase of a major improvement project at Lindo Lake County Park in Lakeside. Phase 1 aims to improve water quality in Lindo Lake's East Basin by deepening the lake, adding water, and taking steps to keep sediment out. A fishing pier and birdwatching station will also be built. In addition, picnic tables, benches, and water-efficient irrigation are planned, as well as restoration. The work is expected to begin this winter and be completed in summer of 2021. A second phase of the project to restore the West Basin is expected to be brought to the board as the first phase nears completion. Board Chairwoman Diane Jacob, whose second supervisorial district includes Lakeside, says the improvement project was long awaited by the Lakeside community. Lakeside was built in the 1800s around Lindo Lake, the only natural lake in San Diego County. Lindo Lake was cut off from its natural source of replenishment in the 1960s when a dam was built upstream on Quail Creek to create Lake Jennings. That move, over time, shrank the amount of water in Lindo Lake, which was split into two basins where water quality deteriorated. Today, the lake is primarily replenished by urban and stormwater runoff from surrounding hillsides and groundwater. The 55-acre Lindo Lake Park is the centerpiece of the Lakeside community, home to Lakeside's community center, a teen center, playgrounds, a picnic shelter, a ball field, outdoor fitness station, tennis courts, and a skate park. Supervisor Jacob summed up the planned improvements in a word, awesome. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lakeside, this is Jonathan Getz.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
May activities include El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert, the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College, Classic Cruise Night Centennial Season in downtown El Cajon, Vintage Alpine, the Lilac Festival in Santa Isabel, Sky Tours in Julian, Open Farm Day at Oasis Camel Dairy, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, America on Main Street in El Cajon, a Gunsmoke fundraiser for a local Lions Club in El Cajon, and the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest.
El Cajon's popular Dinner and a Concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. The season opens on May 3rd with Sully and the Blue-Eyed Band. Other May performers include Wild Heart, Stars in the Water, Santana Ways, and Polyester Express. Shows will continue all summer long. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many restaurants nearby before attending the concert. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Some of the region's top young musical talents will converge on May 4th at Cuyamaca College when the 11th annual Coyote Music Festival returns to the Rancho San Diego campus's Grand Lawn. The family-friendly community festival features groups with styles ranging from dream pop to alternative folk and R&B playing on two stages from noon to 4 p.m. Food trucks and vendors will be on hand too. The entirely student-run event culminates a semester-long music industry seminar class that covers everything involved in staging a music festival, including marketing, promotions, production, booking, staging, and sound engineering. For a schedule of performers, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights is celebrating its centennial season. You can view classic cars each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. On May 1st, Tri-5 Chevys will be featured, so guests are encouraged to wear your poodle skirts and leather jackets. May 8th is Corvette Cruise Night, and on May 15th, it's Kids Day to Play. May 22nd is Military Appreciation Day, and May 29th is Convertible Night. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
The 29th Annual Vintage Alpine, a fundraiser for the Alpine Kiwanis Club, will be held on May 5th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs. Described as a wine and food experience in the country, this event features 32 wineries from California and around the world, plus tastes from restaurants countywide. The event also includes live music and a silent auction in a beautiful garden setting. For tickets and details, visit vintagealpine.org.
The Lilac Festival continues at Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside Julian, each weekend through May 12th. Lilac cuttings and plants are available for purchase. You can also sign up for activities including candle making, hay rides, a petting zoo, reptile show, jug band performance, archery, tomahawk throwing, and more. For full details, you can check fortcross.com.
The Observers Inn in Julian is offering guided tours of the night sky at its astronomical observatory houses and research-grade telescopes on Saturday, May 11th, from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Each sky tour is unique and may include planets, star clusters, nebula, galaxies, comets, and the moon. Advance reservations are required, and there is a fee for those who are not staying overnight at the inn. For reservations, you can call 760-765-0088 or visit observersinn.com/skytours.htm.
Paul Combs and Melanie Grinnell will perform a jazz saxophone and piano concert on May 12th from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Mission Trails Church. The concert series was formerly held at Mission Trails Regional Park, but has relocated to the Mission Trails Church with monthly Sunday concerts scheduled. You can find a full listing of upcoming concerts at the Second Sunday Community Concerts page on Facebook.
Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona will host an open farm day on May 12th from 1 to 4 p.m. Guests can visit the friendly camels, enjoy a bird show, ride a camel, see Sheep Town, shop in the Camel Products gift shop, and take cool selfies with camels. For more information, you can visit cameldairy.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, an exotic animal rescue facility in Alpine, invites you to get wild and support their nonprofit at Wild in the Country on May 18th from 2 to 6 p.m. Enjoy al fresco dining and live music in the company of the sanctuary's animals. You can also bid in live and silent auctions. You can find tickets and details at lionstigersandbears.org.
El Cajon invites you to the city's 6th annual America on Main Street on May 18th from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The event fosters respect of diverse ethnic and historical groups in the community. This year, the theme is Out of the World, recognizing the 50th anniversary of the 1969 moon landing. Other highlights include a tribute to Armed Forces Day, a naturalization ceremony for new American citizens, a scavenger hunt, over 150 booths including foods from around the world, face painting, balloon artists, a space and science area, first responder safety zone, carnival rites, and live entertainment including over 30 bands, community groups, and street performers. To learn more, visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
The El Cajon Valley Host Lions and the Winchester Widows will present their annual fundraiser, Gunsmoke, on Saturday, May 18th at El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 in El Cajon from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. The event includes live Western and bluegrass music, a silent auction, gambling chips, and food, all to support the Lions' community services for the underprivileged, and a program that provides eyeglasses to people in need.
Julian's annual Fiddle and Pickin' competition will be held on May 25th from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Julian's historic town hall. Hosted by the California Old Time Fiddlers Association, the competition draws nationally known talent and is open to all ages in fiddle, mandolin, banjo, and guitar. Details for this family-friendly event are available at sandiegofiddler.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section of our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals and events and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
When you go to an emergency room, you often don't have a say in choosing the hospital, and sometimes patients get slapped with huge surprise bills if it is out of network with their insurance provider. The State Assembly Committee on Health passed legislation to change that. Assembly Bill 1611 would make sure patients only pay their copay and deductible even at an out-of-network facility, and it would cap the amount hospitals can charge on out-of-network bills. Nikki Pogue, who went to the emergency room at Zuckerberg SF General Hospital with bronchitis and came out with a massive bill, sees the practice of so-called balance billing as unconscionable.
When you are suffering from life-threatening symptoms, the last thing you should be thinking about is whether or not your hospital is considered in-network. To receive a bill for $13,000 that, you know, I was responsible for $10,000 of was stunning.
Pogue gave input for the legislation. Hospital networks have said the changes outlined in AB 1611 would be a major blow to their finances. Last week, under pressure, Zuckerberg SF General discontinued the practice of balance billing for its insured patients. After 5 months of fighting, Pogue's insurance company paid her bill, but she says many other patients face financial ruin for something they couldn't control. Pogue hopes changing the law would spur insurance companies and hospitals to negotiate lower rates.
It gives room for the insurance companies and the hospitals to meet somewhere in the middle and to cut the patient out of it. I mean, that's the problem, is that right now the patient is in the middle, and if you don't have the resources to fight it, you know, you get left holding the bill.
AB 1611 now goes to the Appropriations Committee. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The County Board of Supervisors has voted unanimously to amend its social host ordinance to add marijuana in addition to alcohol. Adults providing marijuana or alcohol to minors can now be arrested and charged with crimes. The amendment is a result of marijuana being more readily available after the passage of Proposition 64, which made its use legal for adults over 21. The board will vote again on the item on May 21st after a second reading. If adopted, the amendments will become effective 30 days after the vote in all unincorporated areas of the county. Adults who violate the ordinances can be cited or arrested, fined $1,000 or more, sent to jail for up to 6 months, required to do up to 32 hours of community service, and billed for law enforcement services. All jurisdictions in San Diego County have social host ordinances in effect for alcohol, and local law enforcement agencies have increased enforcement, issuing hundreds of citations in recent years. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording from our studio in East County, and I'm here today with Jonathan Goetz to talk about the 22 applicants who have applied to fill the vacancy on the El Cajon City Council left by the resignation of Ben Colasso. Jonathan, thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Now, the seat will be filled by appointment, and the applicants range from prominent individuals to community activists, bringing a diverse range of views and visions for El Cajon.
The City Council will be interviewing the applicants at its May 14th meeting, listeners, at 7 p.m. And earlier in the day at 3 p.m., council members will discuss the procedures for picking the next council member, who will fill the at-large seat that was held by Colasso until the 2020 election.
So in alphabetical order, here are the people who hope to be the next El Cajon City Council member based on information they provided in their applications.
First up is Richard Agundez, Jr. He's a retired El Cajon police sergeant who received the department's Medal of Valor for stopping the Granite Hills High School shooting back in 2001, and he's currently a commissioner on the city's Personnel Commission. He's also coached high school football, volunteered on the board of Stoney's Kids, and served as a DARE instructor, helping teach young people about risks of drugs. His three highest priorities to address are homelessness, traffic, and youth drug education. He would categorize the homeless issue by attacking problems based on each person's situation, and he wants more traffic enforcement officers to improve safety. He also wants to promote education of young people to stay off drugs.
Joe Alegria is a board member and former president at Cajon Valley Union School District. She has previously worked as a paralegal and as a student care supervisor at Dehesa School, as well as doing customer service for an insurance agency. She is active at the East County San Diego Pregnancy Care Clinic and is a deaconess at Shadow Mountain Community Church, as well as a board member at the Boys and Girls Club of East County Foundation. Her highest priorities would be homelessness, civic engagement, and youth programs. She has also participated in chamber task forces and wants to seek out communities that have had success in addressing help for the most destitute. On civic engagement, she wants to give youth more opportunities to be involved and understand the value of service.
Juan Barajas is a child support officer with the County of San Diego. He's also an administrative assistant at an engineering consulting firm and an instructional assistant at San Diego Unified School District. His community involvement includes Boy Scouts of America. He holds multiple licenses and certificates, including shelter manager with the County of San Diego and the San Diego Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT Academy. His highest priority issues, he says, are homelessness, including encouraging families to be self-sufficient, as well as business development. He also wants to address a lack of public trust in safety, including redesigning public outreach for the police department.
Humbert Cabrera is president of his own architectural firm and is a former El Cajon Citizen of the Year. A graduate of the East County Chamber of Commerce Leadership Program, he has also received a Project for California's Future certificate and received honors from the County Board of Supervisors, Congress, and the state legislature. He has worked on the city's deemed approved alcohol ordinance and the Measure D Charter City Amendment. His community experience includes serving as past president of El Cajon Rotary Club and on the Board of Salvation Army, on the Chamber's Government Affairs Committee, and other nonprofit work. He has also helped less fortunate children get supplies and clothes for school. His highest priorities would be homelessness, cleaning up the city, representing needs of all citizens, including minorities, and bringing more jobs and businesses by working to reduce overburdening regulations and taxes.
John Campbell is a retired U.S. Navy captain who was in charge of two ships. He has owned and managed multifamily properties as well, and as a real estate broker, operated a property investment company for 15 years. He has served as president of the San Diego County Apartment Association and on the El Cajon Personnel Commission. He's also past president of the Kiwanis Club of El Cajon Valley, and he previously ran for the council back in 1996. His top priority is also homelessness, but he states, "I would not support activities such as feeding stations, which serve to enable the homeless to continue their lifestyle and behavior. Another priority is housing, but on that," he says, "I have a problem with public funds going toward brand new housing for low-income residents. Instead, he wants to see funds used to subsidize rents for people in need, and he wants to revive the Neighborhood Watch program in the city." Campbell, interestingly, has pledged not to seek re-election in 2020 so as to create a level playing field for all candidates.
Margaret Carlson is a retired teacher in the Cajon Valley School District who also served for 10 years as a Parks and Recreation Commissioner in El Cajon. She helped organize the International Friendship Festival in El Cajon and has participated with First Lutheran Church to help clean up the city with the I Love a Clean El Cajon campaign, also serving on the Ladies Auxiliary for El Cajon AmVets. Her top priorities are bringing another hospital to East County, assuring high-quality performances at the East County Performing Arts Center, providing more recreation and activities for seniors, encouraging more Neighborhood Watch programs, and reinstating the crime-free multiple housing program for all rentals in El Cajon. She also wants to hold more public forums on city concerns, including safety and emergency information.
Estela De Los Rios is executive director of CSA San Diego. That's a fair housing agency. She holds degrees in sociology and business. She has taken numerous leadership courses, including the University of California Leadership Program, and has familiarity with federal block grants and the city's housing element. She's managed budgets, including federal, state, and local contracts, and wrote successful grants. She's a member of the East County Homelessness Task Force and has provided community outreach on issues affecting low-income people. She chaired the East County Census in 2010 and chaired the Welcome Newcomer Network, comprised of 50 organizations. She's been active at a national level on human trafficking and women's issues, and internationally with the United Nations. She currently serves on the Police Chief of El Cajon's Advisory Board. Her top issues are homelessness, lack of veterans and senior services, and the health and safety of residents. She says there are models to address mental health issues and health issues among the homeless and train them for jobs. De Los Rios adds that veterans and seniors are being displaced due to mobile home park rules and regulations, an issue that she aims to resolve.
James Alia formerly ran for the State Assembly. He works in business development for Ace Parking in California. Formerly a board member with the Neighborhood Market Association, he has also worked on legislation and studied finance services and insurance. He says he brings years of business development, economic development, and business relations skills to the council. His top priorities are public safety, homelessness, and affordable housing. He adds, "I also feel as a Chaldean American, we need representation in the city of El Cajon."
George Glover is a Vietnam veteran and current records specialist with the El Cajon Police Department. He has served as senior IT manager at a major computer company, and his experience includes management, people, and budget skills. He says he also has small business experience as owner of a family barbecue business. His community experience includes serving on the city's Veterans Commission and on the East County Homeless Task Force. He was named the city's Veteran of the Year and organized a Veterans Day event. He's also in the American Legion and served on the Chamber's Veterans Roundtable, and he ran for council back in 2016. His top issues include business, homelessness, and public safety. He touts fiscal responsibility and a balanced budget, as well as finding new businesses to expand the tax base. He wants to see the city promote hiring and training of veterans, noting that 10% of the city's population are vets. He views homelessness as a multi-pronged problem that requires different approaches depending on each individual or family's situation. And he also voices concern over the growth in crime, including gang violence.
Stephanie Harper worked as a disc jockey and wedding planner for 14 years, a job she says taught her how to read people and really listen to the needs of others. She has been a customer services agent and holds a paralegal certificate from MiraCosta College. She previously ran for council in 2016 and has volunteered in the We All Count of the Homeless, also serving as co-president of the East County Democratic Club for 2 years. Her top priorities are homelessness, protection, and budget spending. "If we could stop the wasteful spending, we would be able to address the other problems," she says, adding that she opposes executive raises. She says citizens need a voice who will fight for them, adding, "This city needs change. I am a fighter, and that's what I will do for them."
Mark Meal is a software engineer who creates interactive games to track student learning. He also helped develop a war zone security and safety simulation for the World Bank Group to train workers traveling to war-torn nations. He's worked as an adjunct professor at SDSU, teaching courses in computer science, business, and information technology. And he's worked at a studio as well as for defense contractors. His volunteer work has included personal trainer for Special Olympic disabled athletes and serving as president of the Arabic Club at Grossmont College. A father of three, he grew up in El Cajon and says he wants to be sure his boys have a good childhood in the city. He says his most important skills are analytical skills, a strong science background, and management experience. His top priorities are fiscal growth, including attracting businesses that can offer higher wages, maintaining a healthy budget that addresses the pension liability problem, and education.
Dolores Landers worked for 32 years doing medical coding and billing, including at Sharp Community Medical, before retiring. She has attended council meetings for many years. A mother of four boys, she has been active in Little League. She did not list any issues as priorities, but instead says elected council members are just that, elected. You have the people's choice, not who fits in to the council way of thinking. She objects to city department heads also having positions on the successor agency oversight, which she views as a conflict of interest.
Mark Lewis served as mayor of El Cajon from 1998 to November 2015 when he resigned. He also served as a council member for 6 years. For more than three decades, he worked as waste management coordinator for the county's Department of Public Works. His application is very brief, given his many years of service to the city. He lists no outside civic or charitable activities. Lewis says his priorities are servicing the public and addressing the homeless situation. He cites his city council experience as his key qualification.
Amanda McImpsey has a decade of business experience, including higher education and construction. She has worked as assistant director of content marketing for a higher education company, where she managed a team of writers and editors producing digital content for public universities. She previously was senior marketing specialist at the New School of Architecture and Design, working with the City of San Diego on events promoting STEM education. She has consulted on marketing and operations plans for the East County Homeless Task Force. Currently, she is completing a Master of Public Education at SDSU, with emphasis in research on homelessness. A top priority of McKimsey's is to increase neighborhood safety, including focusing on youth and recreation programs. She supports economic development to develop a campaign showing why El Cajon is an attractive location for small business owners and wants to address homelessness by creating connections with nonprofits. In the wake of the divisiveness on the council during Colosio's tenure, McKimsey says she wants to build a culture of collaboration among council members.
Daniel McNamara is a field leader at Chipotle Mexican Grill, with 20 years of experience, including two at an executive level overseeing hundreds of employees at 10 to 20 locations. He previously served in the Navy. He led a community project to renovate the East County Transitional Living Center and has been committed to helping with refugee resettlement through his church, as well as feeding the hungry and working with the International Rescue Committee. His community service includes Boy Scouts, and he's participated in the 2000 census. He reads 100 books a year and calls himself a lifelong student. He's now pursuing a degree in business management at UCSD's Extension. He says the city's priorities come from the passion, vision, and needs of its people. He believes in keeping a balance between strength of the economy, social and cultural conditions, planning, and building.
Juan Carlos Mercado has been a deputy sheriff with San Diego County since 2007. He previously worked as a truck driver and carpet care business owner. An Iraq War combat veteran, he served as a captain in the U.S. Army from 1989 to 2001. He is founder of the nonprofit Deported Veterans of America and has actively fought for the rights of veterans. He has also served as vice president of the Barrio Logan Veterans of Foreign Wars, or VFW, and authored the book Fate of a Deported Veteran. He is fluent in Spanish and German. His priorities are to aid the homeless and create affordable housing, provide free or low-cost education and trade school training for jobs, and help single mothers, including domestic violence victims, with daycare, school, work, and mental health. He also wants to improve roads and infrastructure and provide substance abuse rehab.
Michelle Mitchell is a department specialist at a local defense contractor. She has an AA degree in liberal arts with emphasis in journalism from Grossmont College. She previously chaired the Board of Trustees at First United Methodist Church in El Cajon and served as a board member of the Manuas community, as well as head musician. Her top priorities are homelessness, crime, housing, and bringing large employers to El Cajon to provide employment. She supports rotating nightly shelters and investigating the potential for a one-stop shelter for the homeless that would offer beds as well as social services, employment counseling, storage of belongings, showers, and washers. She also wants to launch a housing fair.
Abraham Mujays is co-owner and founder of the San Diego Kings basketball team. He also handles marketing and community outreach for an attorney. A native of East County, he attended Montana State University on a football scholarship, studying communications, and later studied liberal arts at Central Washington University with a minor in communications. He created a nonprofit, Alumni United, to educate and inspire youths with athletes, entrepreneurs, and motivational speakers. He has raised funds for El Cajon Valley High School and recently joined the El Cajon Lions Club. His priorities are homelessness, marketing, and drugs. He wants to train a better homeless task force, provide marketing through social media and events to help bring the city together, and work to prevent drug use in youths. He aspires to bring more people together to make our city one of the best in the world.
Phil Ortiz serves on the city's planning commission. He is the owner and CEO of New Earth Energy Specialists, Inc., and previously served as military college advisor at Ashford University, where he received a master's degree in organizational management, with an emphasis in public administration. He also holds a bachelor's degree in criminal justice administration from SDSU. He's a board member on the East County Chamber of Commerce and founding member of the El Cajon Community Cleanup Group. He has served on the Forester Creek Committee and is a home pastor at Foothills Church. His top priorities are public safety, including making retention of officers a priority, as well as homelessness, including partnering with local organizations, and he wants metrics to determine programs' effectiveness. He also supports a balanced budget and revitalization for the city.
Anthony Sotile serves on the City Planning Commission and has had 5 years as chairman. Semi-retired after 40 years in the insurance business, he has also served as an Army Reserve medic, real estate agent, chief financial officer at a church, school administrator, and Latin teacher of a private school, as well as pastor of a small home church. He has attended City College, Grossmont College, and SDSU. His goals would be wise planning for strong businesses, community health, and quality of life for all citizens. He views homelessness as primarily a moral issue and believes most homeless choose the lifestyle which invites squalid conditions that will bring a city down.
Nancy Wilson is a family law attorney with her own practice. Wilson has also worked as a licensed real estate agent and in her father's cabinet business. She has a bachelor's degree from Cal State University in English and political science, as well as a law degree from the University of San Diego. She's done charity work with Ronald McDonald House through a sorority and served as president of a condominium board of directors for 10 years. Her top priorities are homelessness, seeking to strengthen programs, as well as code enforcement and volunteer efforts to address blighted properties. She also wants revitalization, noting that some restaurants and other businesses have left El Cajon. Wilson says, "I see changes in the community that are negative that I hope to impact."
Stephen Craig Wood is an estimating manager at a construction company. He previously worked for an electrical contractor and as a pharmacy store manager. He has a bachelor's degree in English from SDSU with a minor in Spanish. His community efforts include serving as vice president of the University Honors Program at SDSU and as an elder and board member at Faith Presbyterian Church. His top priorities are to see completion of development projects in a timely manner and tackling municipal cleanup and redevelopment to emulate the success downtown in areas such as Hamishaw from Main to I-8 and Broadway from Hamishaw to 67. He also is concerned about homelessness and poverty, including the working poor. He hopes to advocate partnering with the county and neighboring cities to address those issues, as well as supporting mixed-use and infill development and improving transit access.
And that completes our roundup of the applicants for the El Cajon City Council. Now, if you missed part of this and you want to read more, you can find all of this information on all 22 candidates at eastcountymagazine.org in our politics section. Again, El Cajon City Council will be hearing from all of these applicants seeking to fill the council vacancy on May 14th at 7 p.m. in the City Council chambers if you wish to come listen or speak out for any of them. The public can speak during the public comments or submit written comments to share your ideas on choosing the next El Cajon City Council member. Jonathan, thanks again for helping us educate our listeners about these fascinating people.
Thank you, Miriam, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in.
This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Working hard to bring you the wildest jobs in East County. Today, Cody and I went to Lakeside. There we met a man who's going to explain why his workday is more interesting than yours, or at least more likely to end up in a trip to the hospital. I'm here today with Kevin Higley, who is a rodeo clown. Kevin, how long have you been doing rodeo clowning?
Ooh, that's a dated question, huh? You're going to make me tell how old I am is what you're trying to get at, right? No, I've been actually a professional rodeo clown for 30 years. Prior to that, I participated in high school rodeo and as a contestant, and then I started doing what we call amateur rodeos as a rodeo clown bullfighter, and then I got my pro card and went on to the professional ranks, and so I've been it for, I bet you, total almost 35 years.
So you were doing professional rodeo as what prior to doing the clown part of it?
I was I tried to be a bull rider. Thought maybe I could make a profession out of it and a living. Wasn't very good at that. So what it came to be was my brother was a really good bull rider, and we had what they call a practice pen at home where we buck some bulls and stuff. And so we took turns being the bullfighter who would save the bull rider. Well, boy, I saved him a whole lot more than he ever thought of saving me. And so it became apparent that I was probably a little bit more adapted to the bullfighting area and saving the cowboys. And that was really the love and passion that I had once I got started, that, you know, the thrill of saving a guy so you can get on to another one is really something else. And as time went on, of course, you slow down a couple steps. Not me, but my mind may. I don't know. But anyway, so then I transferred into the rodeo clown / barrel man type aspect of the professional rodeo deal.
Now, you use the term bull fighting, which seems more appropriate to me somehow. So here's another question for you. I've noticed that bulls don't seem to have a lot of sense of humor. So have you actually made one ever laugh?
Oh, yeah, they're always smiling when they run over you. Yeah, well, they've got a smile. You know, a lot of people, they used to say that a bull will actually close his eyes before he runs over you. But that's not true. I can attest to that. They're wide open, and they are laughing. It's like, I got you, buddy. It's good.
So the natural follow-up to that is, how many bones have you had broken?
That's one we don't like to discuss very much. But, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to stay away from most of the broken bones. I fractured a couple neck vertebrae, and I've had a couple of bones in my foot broke and a couple of things like that. But as a whole, I've been really healthy and really good.
Do you really like to use the word whole when you're talking about bulls and horns and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's kind of, you got to watch that one. Put you in a hole.
Now, I'm sure that people, not necessarily associated with rodeo, but people on the outside probably think that you would do this for the thrills. What kind of satisfaction do you get from actually doing this work?
That's a great question. You know, like I said early on, is just the satisfaction that you've did something to help somebody else to be able to further their career and go on and stuff. So saving a bull rider from a bull or helping him, assisting him to be a higher score, that's where it starts. And that now it's the thrill of entertainment, you know, making people laugh. I just love to hear them giggle and laugh. And so that part is where I'm at now in my career. So we do it for the love, because, you know, unlike a lot of professional sports, the money isn't probably as good as your football, your baseball, your basketball players. But it also is an aspect of it. We do it for the money as well.
Yeah, so you're as a professional rodeo, I see that you have a big trailer. So you travel around from rodeo to rodeo?
I do. Throughout the course of this year, I'll probably be in at least 15 states. I guess the farthest away, which my trailer wasn't able to go with me and a lot of my animals wasn't, was Hawaii. We've actually did rodeos in Hawaii on two of the islands over there.
Oh, really? So you did go to Hawaii, but you just didn't float your trailer across?
No, trailer stayed home as well as my animals that I use in my clown acts, yeah.
Okay, so you do an act out on the in the arena with your own animals. I see you have a dog over there. Is that one of your?
Yeah, I've actually got three or four dogs, and I've got a trick horse, trick mule. You know, sometimes the kids become my tricks. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about getting the crowd involved, and so we use the kids a lot of times in some of the things we do.
If I ever were to find myself in a field with a pissed off bull, because you know that happens to me a lot, give me some ideas for how to sort of distract the guy.
Well, you know, so the best thing to do is, of course, it's not all about how fast you can outrun them. It's about the move that you can make to get around them. Because they got a big old body and they got to bend in half to get to back to where you are. So what you want to do is you want to kind of get in as close as possible and then make that move to the inside and keep them coming. And then when you get to break, you break them so they're on a different lead and you can get away from them.
So you have to fight every instinct, natural instinct, to turn around and run. You have to get close to them, right next to them, in order to be safe.
You're sure better off. Yeah, you're better off. I mean, I know that my legs have never stood around for my face to take a beating, you know. And so it's kind of a natural instinct to run, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you use. The apparel that we wear, the things we wear that gets their attention, that will bring them in your direction, and then it's up to you to make the move to bring them away from the cowboy and to get yourself away.
Okay. Now, professional football players, you mentioned them. They're always complaining about having a short career. Now, you've been doing this for a while. How long would you say the average rodeo clown sort of stays in the profession?
You know, and I guess that would be a term that's kind of tough to use, average, because I don't know any of us that are too, you know. And I guess the guy that kind of I look up to and kind of was my mentor, taught me a little bit, was a guy by the name of Wick Path. And he actually fought bulls at an active level, professional level, till he was 57 years old. It's all about how physically fit you stay. We've got a guy in the business right now that's strictly entertainment. He doesn't even get in the barrel anymore or do any of those things to help out. And he's 78 years old and very active and doing a great job.
Okay, well, see, my son here is, let's say that he goes to see his guidance counselor at school, and the guidance counselor, I've noticed, is, doesn't have any posters on the wall of rodeos or anything.
No.
But let's say that she says that she's changed her mind and he should forget about engineering and all of that, and he should become a rodeo clown. What advice would you give him for getting into this job, apart from why don't you do something safe like join the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, there we go. Two safe jobs. Well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do with modern day rodeo, we have schools, and the best thing to do for someone that's inspiring to be a rodeo clown or a bullfighter or a participant, a contestant, is to search out one of those schools and go spend a week, 3 days, whatever the school is, and actually get a head start on what they really could do and if they're adapted for that.
Do you know of any women who do this job who are rodeo clowns?
You know, there used to be, years ago, there was a lady that actually didn't actually do the bullfighting part of the clown, but she got in the barrel and she would tell a few jokes and do stuff. But that was a long time ago. Right at this present time, I don't know anybody, any ladies. I think it has to do with intelligence.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent point. Cody, you have a question?
Yeah. What's the deal with the barrels? What exactly do you do with barrels?
Okay. The barrel is out there for a particular reason. We had put it out in the middle of the arena. Actually, not quite the middle of the arena. It's a little closer to the bucking chutes. And it really becomes kind of like a safe haven for the bullfighters or the bull riders. In case that bull is coming at them, they're caught out in no man's land, they can come there, catch the breath, get away, or at least the bull will be distracted so they can move on. It's my job as a barrel man to position my barrel in a place which will help assist the bullfighters and the bull rider to be able to have a little bit more safety. So, and it's really like sitting in a washing machine just waiting for somebody to turn that thing on, the spin cycle. Because when one of those guys hits it, it can really turn your world upside down.
So it sounds like your job is more about strategy than it is about, I mean, obviously on YouTube or on TV, what they like to show is rodeo clowns being tossed and trampled and all that. But the object is to avoid that and to protect the cowboys and to entertain the crowd, basically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a given that you're going to be in a very bad situation most of the time because, you know, you've got an unpredictable animal. He's gonna do what he wants to do. He's going to do this. So you're going to be put in a position where you're going to get in there that you're probably going to get what they call hooked and thrown out of there. But the better that you prepare yourself to be able to make yourself in the right position to walk away from that, the longer your career will be.
So you're kind of like the ninjas of the West, is what you're telling me.
I never had it put that way, but yeah, cowabunga, dude, let's do it.
Okay, Cody.
So is it true about bulls that they don't like red, like don't like red capes? Is that true?
Great question. You know, and it really is a myth. It doesn't have to do with the red cape that the matadors you see if the matadors are fighting, or like in our case, we wear bandanas a lot of times on our deals. It's all about the movement. It's the movement of something that brings their attention to it, and that's why when you see the guys with the capes and the matadors, and they can stand in one spot, but the bull will follow a cape and follow that deal.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people of East County?
Boy golly, if they get a chance, come to the rodeo. They're going to enjoy it.
So, Cody, now that you've seen a little bit of what life as a rodeo clown is like, are you ready to reconsider your future?
No, because as much as my counselors say that I should quit any field that involves thinking, I think I should steer clear of this kind of career.
Are you saying that you don't want to get involved in something that can cow you this much?
You know, I have a lot of beef with you saying something that mean about me, Dad.
Well, I would say that right now my attitude is the lasso your problems.
I just don't know if I'm capable of learning the ropes on this exciting career.
Well, son, that sounds like a lot of bull to me because I don't know anyone who clowns around as much as you do. This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Clocking out of one of the wildest jobs in East County.
East County Magazine has won over 112 major journalism awards.
With reporting that's making a positive difference in our region, the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ covers important topics such as fire protection, energy and environmental issues, stories from East County's Native American and Chaldean communities, rural issues, and helping local veterans. Please help keep the East County Magazine show on KNSJ by donating or making a sustaining monthly pledge at www.knsj.org. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.